Hey, what's up? Black and Jew Podcast, episode 56. What? Broadcasting from the future.
Whoa, we've had a good run that we've made it to 56 episodes.
It's great. Here we are with the new queen of Michigan. It's Rhett Thompson. I don't know how it happened.
Queen of Michigan? Yeah. Why is she the queen of Michigan?
She just... You remember how that happened? You know, she rode the phoenix and cleansed the land. That was real cool, Rhett Thompson.
Talk to us about that. I saw that on CNN. I kind of was out of the loop because I was out, you know... I was out with that mountain that I bought in Wisconsin. So,
yep, there you go. See?
So I forgot the Phoenix thing. And
how much gold and ore that, did that have?
Like a lot. A lot. And the fact that that now that the renewable energy is coming from the ashes of Rhett's Phoenix.
Yeah.
The world is a different place here at Black and Jew episode 56.
Well, all right. Hola, all my chimpies in podcast land. I'm a little taken aback. By the Michigan reference, you know, everyone knows I'm from Ohio. So the sheer fact that you would bless me with a mitten state of Michigan, I feel like, wow, this is probably how, I don't know, Josephine of France felt when Napoleon said, hey, you get Haiti. And you're like, what the hell? Why would I want that?
Oh, okay, Napoleon. Okay. By the way, guys, if you are all confused, it's actually episode 27, and we're here with the awesome and ever so funny Rhett Thompson.
Or, known in some circles as Loretta Thompson.
Loretta Thompson.
Hola again, all my chippies and podcasts.
Loretta Thompson. Finally, usurping Josh Silverman is the... Loudest podcast guest.
Oh my
loudest
gosh. Laughing podcast guest. My goal is to blow everyone's eardrums out, and I think someone edits that out with a blowing bar.
Right now, I think the mixer's at a 5. Usually, it's at 7.
Edit out blow ears. Yes. As per Rhett's request. My goal is to blow everyone.
I'm gonna play that on repeat over and over again. I feel like Rhett, you were like a podcasting pioneer because I don't know any comedy podcasts in Miami until Brown Skin and Glasses, right? Were you the first?
I think I was amongst the first. Actually, I believe Nary Sands. Nary Sands.
Oh, Woo Bro, that's true.
Yeah, Nary Sands, early adopter. Early Nary Sands, and then I think that was it.
Yeah. So it was you two, pioneer here.
So you're number two. You were like Lois and Clark's estranged cousins.
Yes, or just two random black people following the Cuban dude. He is Cuban, right? And there he is. So it's pretty much.
I don't think so.
He's Nicaraguan.
Yes.
But it's all the same to you, isn't it, Rhett? It's all the same to you, people.
Pretty much. I told you, like, growing up in Ohio, we only had, like, 4 or 5 racial food groups. So that would be all... He would be Puerto Rican. That's what we would call him.
It's like, sorry, we're out of categories.
White, Puerto Rican, black, Asian?
No, everyone was Chinese.
You were the only
Chinese
Asian person.
And what was the last one?
Let's see. White, black,
racially Chinese, ambiguous. Like, what are you? Are you
mixed.
Samoan?
Are you mixed? Yeah.
You mixed?
Mixed. Yeah, probably that.
Being mixed is it's really interesting. I
you guys
you
are both
some...
mixed, right?
Yes, we're
How
both
many
mixed.
Races do we have here? We got a lot. We got like 5 sitting at this table.
It's like a Benetton ad, except where's the endorsement? Where's my Benetton money?
This could be a Cheerios commercial. Like you could be the mom, you can be the dad, and I'd be like, I'm back from college, guys. How's it going? Have some Cheerios with us, little mix, little boy.
I would totally throw them on you. That's what happened in that commercial, right? Did someone get Cheerios?
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, this will fix dad's heart. And then she poured. That commercial is very endearing, actually.
I think it
turns out the Cheerios didn't work and he needs a stent.
If it got really dark, imagine if that commercial just got really dark. Just like, I'm not going to eat Cheerios, woman. And then, you know, little girls like in a room. Ooh.
Or like, dad, mom, dad, don't fight. And then they fight and then the cops will be called and then he gets shot. And then
the cop gives him, then the cops give him some Cheerios. to calm him down.
The cops like, you know, give the little girl a bowl of Cheerios. And like,
the post-traumatic stress disorder is triggered. And then she freaks out and just goes all fucking AWOL on everybody. She just goes totally postal because she can't handle the Cheerios.
So about being a pioneer.
Yes.
I know Lamont's really into like creating content and being like a producer of content. how was he seems like he was a really good podcasting buddy.
He was.
I listened to Brown Skin and Glasses and I loved it. So I identified with it and I also bonded over that with a friend, Jarrett, listener of the podcast.
Oh, I
big
was
fan
hoping
of you guys.
Oh, thank you. I was hoping you had bonded over a woman, but clearly this is only we only fostered bromances. No, it was a great podcast. I loved it. I loved it. You know, it was one of those projects I'd always wanted to be involved with producing a podcast, but it was kind of like virginity. I wanted to wait for the right person to come along.
That's
how
I felt.
And then there was Lamont.
Lamont seems like he's a very tender lover.
He is. He's tender and rough. He's a tender roughy. Yeah. Not tender roughy. Tender roughy. I was trying to make it work. Anyway, so yeah, Lamont and I, we got together and it was...
Tenduff. That's the word you're looking
for. Tenduff.
What the fuck does that mean?
Tender and rough. Keep up.
Yeah, tenduff.
I thought this was just like some ethnic thing I wasn't in on.
It's a black thing. Some mixed thing.
It's like only mixed people can say 10 duff. Doesn't matter
and
what
we
mix.
Have our own telepathic language.
You could be Korean. You could be like Korean Japanese. Doesn't matter. 10 duff. Only mixed people can use it. So
don't use our word, please. I don't really appreciate that, Mike. Back. 10 duff.
It belongs to us. Exactly.
The tender rough lover.
He was tender and rough. No, it was great. It was a really great podcast. And, you know, we lasted a year, like 52 episodes. And to be honest with you, like, I could have gone on. I'm pretty sure I could have gone on with it. I felt like we were getting some nice, like, momentum and we're hitting a good stride. But, you know, Lamont, he wanted to go in a different direction. And, you know, like, I had talked him out of it a couple of times. But, you know, there's a point where, you know, when you're doing something creative and you're working with someone, you have to kind of respect their space, you know?
Yeah.
And if they feel like that's what's best for them, you kind of have to let them go. Like a bird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like a bird. You got to let the bird go.
He's a beautiful, beautiful bird.
Like a bird or big bird or ostrich. I don't know. Anyway, no, I love Lamont. And I always told him, you know, I would keep the door open with the Brown Skin and Glasses thing if he had ever wanted to do it again. But I think at this point, you know, it's kind of like a divorce. It's a divorce.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You don't want that relationship to end. But now, and, you know, now it's over. And then I was like, well, I knew that I wanted to continue podcasting, but I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Like, Lamont always took care of, just like a marriage, Lamont always took care of the technical stuff. Like, he's very technical, and he would deal with all the editing and all of that.
He is a technical writer.
He is a technical writer, so it all made sense. But I figured, well, if life gives you lemons, you know, if life gives you limes, make mojitos or some other alcoholic beverage that is tasty and delicious.
Could also just have lemonade, Rhett.
Yeah.
You could just have limeade.
This is why
Lamont divorced her, because she makes things too complicated.
Exactly.
You could can't just have lemonade.
It's a normal analogy that's been around for decades, that
let's make mojitos.
I have to have booze involved. And so that's when I started doing my own thing.
Black Anise chick.
I figured, well, what could I do that kind of says me without knowing what direction the podcast was going to go? And so I figured, yeah, that would be good. Black and East chick.
How do you spill up all that time? Because usually you're just so quiet. And you're such a woman of few words, you know? I don't understand.
You're like Batman.
Just exactly.
Come in, bada bada bada, just shoot the grapple. Yeah.
At least in my head. You know, it's funny because, like, in the beginning, And I have to say, I still feel that I'm still finding my way in terms of the podcast and what direction I want to go and all of that sort of thing. But initially, I had tried to do it in the same format as Brown Skin and Glasses, but by myself, which is weird. It's like Laurel and Hardy without Laurel or whoever the skinny one was. I don't know which one would qualify. It's like, does that mean I have to be the fat one? Like, I don't know what that means. But, like, I'm not fat shaming myself. But like, so, you know, I had like a list of topics and what I would do. And then as time kind of, you know, went along, you know, I would still write it out, at least notes to myself, like bullet points of what I wanted to talk about. And then it would just kind of go.
Hey, remember when we used to have topics?
Articles? we went through a whole thing where we'd email each other like, okay, have the articles by this day and we'll talk about them
and
by
we'll
this.
Read them and talk about
and
them.
We'll read them and talk about them. And it was like, boop, beep, boop, really robotic. But now we just kind of whoop, just roll with
it. And then I said, I'm like, I want to talk, we'll talk shit for the first half hour.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the articles gave us some structure. I think we needed it at the beginning because we've gotten better at this.
Yeah.
But it kind of gave us that much needed structure. And then... And then now we just kind of eat shit. And we still do articles, but not as formal.
Yeah, not as formal.
We would email them to the guests. And I think, who was it? Kato read them? Or read two of them?
Yeah, Kato was actually probably the only guest that read them.
Yeah, she read most of them.
And added one more article.
Yeah, and added an article.
Were you sending them articles or theses?
Just articles, you know. Off the Daily Dot. Also my master's thesis. I was studying with them.
He's like, what ideas do you have about the morbidity and mortality of Dickensian literature?
Hey, everyday toilet reading.
They had to write a 5,000-word essay that we might or may or may not use on the podcast. Man, you've been doing comedy for a while, you know?
How long have you been doing comedy?
You have like a story, you know? Like we don't have stories. Like we've been doing for comedy for a while.
2 years,
like,
actually.
Yeah, like
I made 2 years this month.
Yeah, I'm almost at 2 years.
I made 2 years this month.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is amazing. I mean, I commend you. Like truly, really truly. Because both of you guys, I find you very entertaining. I always laugh when I see you guys perform. I always look forward. I don't look forward to everyone performing. I really, truly, I don't.
That's like, kind of one of those things. Like,
if you were a comedian that looked forward to everybody performing, that would make you an insane person.
No, I enjoy comedy. I really, truly enjoy it. Like, when I go to open mics, I mean, obviously, I want to work on my own stuff, and I look forward to my time on stage. But
yeah.
I really, truly enjoy watching certain people perform, like really, like if I find myself being lost as an audience member, I feel like that's something because you see so much, and so it's nice when folks stick out, you know.
Yeah, when you're watching and going to so many comedy shows, it just gets monotonous and it just streams into your
eyes.
And it's
like Josh Silverman, like we always talk about on the podcast. I always love watching Josh. Like, I always want to know what he says next, because usually it's pretty smart, you know?
Yes.
But, like, some people, like, look, you can't look forward to everyone, because some people are just insane people ranting. Like, they're just insane.
It's like, oh, look, a microphone. I have a voice now. Don't worry, gremlins.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh. But the problem is when people, if it's my first time seeing you and you're doing something like that, I don't think of it as schizophrenia. I think of it as, oh, they're doing something abstract and new. How
you're
new age
so
of them.
Kind.
You're so nice. Fuck that. Fuck that. I'm like, really, dude? Like you're going to walk half the audience with your fucking conspiracy theories, you asshole. God damn. Like, I don't mind political humor. It's cool with me, but it's like, this is a comedy show. This is not like a fucking protest rally in Portland, you know, where you're just ranting like an insane person. I don't know. I have opinion. I probably shouldn't be saying this.
No, that's cool.
I should probably be like, no, man, I respect your fucking style.
I can't. No, I'm with Mike on this one where, you know, like people work really hard to produce some work, to do something, to develop a 5 minutes, to go up there, to develop a 10, a 15, a 20, a 30.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some guy will go up there and then it's like, let me tell you what I think about Barack Obama.
Yeah.
He ain't my president. And then, you know, muted applause. They get off and they're like, yeah, I think I got my point about Obama straight. And then that's what they think is comedy.
I think I changed a lot of minds about the Israel Hamas conflict tonight.
Exactly.
So it's just, I'm going to say it's insulting. I'm going to be controversial. If I wasn't so in control of my emotions, I'd probably even say they should probably maybe visit hell.
Well, not stay there, of course.
No, visit.
That's unpleasant.
A visit.
Yeah.
A visit.
But it's insulting, and you know, you alienate the audience. You make them feel weird and uncomfortable. And now it's like, oh, the next one's definitely going to be crazy. Oh, look, up to the stage comes Reggie. So, you know, I'm a black nerd. Okay, you're all leaving. All right, see ya.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
But you've been, how do you deal with that? You've been seeing so many comics. How long?
Oh, it's been a while. I started, oh, God. I'm going to totally date myself. I started the first time.
In 2010. Oh. When you just got out of college.
Yeah, in that blue time. Yeah. There was a time, once upon a time, that I lived in New York City.
Nice.
I lived in New York City, and I was in grad school, and I was in grad school for screenwriting and theater writing and some other nonsense. And I think I came to the realization somewhere within the first month. I was like, oh, they only have screenwriting and theater writing classes, like playwriting. But I really wanted to do TV. And I don't really want to do TV. I really want to do sketch writing. But they, of course, they didn't have that. I was like, oh, crap, I'm
here. Did you consider trying to join a UCB or like a Second City up in New York?
Oh, this is where I'm really going to date myself. This is before UCB.
Oh, shit, son.
That was before Upright Citizen. Yes.
So you're an OG.
I am Black Don't Crack. That's what that is. I am the picture of Dorian Gray reincarnated. So back in those days,
Because I remember you telling me that story about how you wrote that telegraph to your
yes, it was like click, click,
to
click,
your
click,
mom
click, click,
asking for more money.
Exactly.
And she says that the trains aren't running for a little while because they ran out of coal.
The Pony Express wasn't.
the man forgot to attach the mailbag to the hook
exactly.
that attaches to the train.
Because you know they were out of copper because of the Great War.
Exactly. The ye old war.
And the good train attendants all had gotten mustard gas.
Exactly. They all died one by one. Now, like, how did I get into it? I guess it depends where you want to start. Long story short, I was in grad school, but someone was doing a stand-up comedy class. I said, yeah, I'll do this. Took the class, and then it wasn't a very good class. It was not good at all.
I personally don't think stand-up comedy is one of those things you teach. Or like it's not
you can't
solidify a theory because then that'll just like that's your whoever's teaching it that's what you think and that's the aesthetics you developed.
Comedy's weird like that. Like comedy, I think the stand-up classes are pretty much worthless.
Well, you know, I have to respectfully disagree.
You think so?
I do. I respectfully
you want some
disagree.
Disagreeing?
Yeah, I'm a disagreeing person. No.
You're disagreeable.
Yeah,
you're disagreeable.
Exactly. I'm totally disagreeable. No, the initial class that I took, it was through my my college or university, whatever. That person teaching the class, not very good. Definitely like a washed-up alcoholic. Not good. But there was a lot of professors like that. But what I did was fast forward a little bit. I had a day job way back when, and I don't know. It was in television production, and someone was like, hey, they're doing this thing. I think it was like Marshall's, of all places. Marshall's had a women in comedy seminar thing. I guess it was very random. New York is random like that. You'll find randomness like
Marshall's
that.
Marshall's,
of all places. Marshall's.
When you're done switching around the price tags.
Exactly. Come do a career in comedy.
Come down and go to the comedy seminar.
Exactly. So it was at a club, I think. It was at a club, and it was like an all-day thing. And this is when the Oxygen Network was first starting up. Yeah, I'm pretty freaking old.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, could you just say what year it is, Rhett?
I'm not going to say what year because I can't even remember. But
just Wikipedia, UCB, and then put college around there.
Yeah. So the thing is, I was there, and I was really there trying to land another TV job. That's what I was trying to do. So, and I figured, well, if there's anything there, I wanted to work for Oxygen. That was the thing.
A new startup.
That's not that long ago. Jesus Christ.
You know,
come on.
So anyway, yeah, it depends. so the thing is, I end up...
Calm down. That's not that long ago.
Wow. I was waiting for the seminar to start, and I happened to be next to this woman who was she had to have been like maybe in her like mid late 50s And she told me she was a stand-up comic. And she said most of her life she
and
had been...
And that lady was Joan Rivers.
I'm going to name drop like crazy. It hasn't started yet. The name dropping has not started. She said that most of her life she had been a housewife on Long Island. But she took this class with the American Comedy Institute. And because of that, that taught her the how to like phrase a joke and all that stuff. And from there, she ended up with I think it was like Toyota Comedy Festival and some other crap. She became legit. She came legit. Okay. So I was like, oh, tell me more of this situation. She's like, hey, you got to hook up with this guy, Steve Rosenfeld, and he's the guy who runs the class. And it's like a XYZ course, you know, and you'll be on your way. So I was like, oh, let me, I don't know. I'm the type of person, I need structure. I can't just like live off someone's couch and then just do time because I won't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm like, what? Do I go up there and craft? No, I don't know. I need a pottery class. I need to be like Ghost. I need to have like Patrick Swayze molding the clay behind me through Whoopi Goldberg's body. That's what I need to
kids,
do.
Wait, kids listening to the podcast.
Is that how that happened? That's not how that movie happened.
Anywho,
I caught it on ABC Family once, and that's not how that happened.
If you don't get the reference, kids, that was like Twilight for older people.
Yeah, instead of vampires, it was a ghost.
Yeah, a girl falls in love with a dead guy,
who really was a black woman. So
no, did he really possess Whoopi?
He did possess Whoopi.
No,
he possessed Whoopi. Yeah.
I never saw the movie.
I don't believe you. I know your joke. You can't.
We can put money on it. I'm a gambling woman. He possessed Whoopi at the end. When they're doing that pottery scene, when it was like that last moment of feeling her husband, that was Whoopi. He possessed Whoopi's body, and basically that was Whoopi sitting next behind
Demi
Moore.
This is a fan fiction that went,
whoa, that's weird. So like, he had really, like,
I don't remember it.
So did he eat Whoopi's, she had to eat Whoopi's pussy?
I don't know
to
how
keep
that
the
works.
Relationship going? I don't know.
Not sure. That was like a one-time thing. He got to go to heaven after that.
It's like, do you feel me?
Yeah.
I feel Whoopi. Maybe you.
I feel a sequel to the Sister Act.
No, definitely that. Yeah, that's...
Out of all the people you could cast to be possessed, you choose Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, she was the medium. She was the medium that...
Oh, she was a medium.
She was the only one that Patrick Swayze, like, that she could actually hear Patrick Swayze. Like, Demi Moore could feel his presence, which not really, but Whoopi was the only one who could see and hear Patrick Swayze. So at the end of the movie, where like Demi Moore finally believes Whoopi, and she was like, oh, like I'm going to let him possess me so you can see him for the last time, because he was dead. He was dead.
Oh, yeah, I got that.
So basically, at the end, that's how that last scene, it's really Patrick Swayze, wow. And Demi, it's really Whoopi.
That's very touching.
It's very touching. So you get to watch that whole pottery scene in the whole new
light.
There
you go, kids. Ghost.
That's Ghost. Whoopi is basically straddling Demi Moore, and they're making pottery together.
What's yeah, but they put sexual. Like an overcast, like a little visual effects overcast over Whoopi, where it's like Patrick Swayze.
It's Patrick Swayze.
But we know that like under that, it's a bunch of dreads.
There's a black woman in there. A black
touching
woman.
Touching Demi Moore.
Touching a white woman. So it's kind of interracial.
Which, as you all know, should not happen.
Well, especially back in, when did that movie come out? Like the 90s? Something?
Yeah.
Yeah, this was when Demi Moore was pre Bruce Willis. So yeah.
So Steve Rosenfield?
Steve Rosenfield.
Yeah,
so
1990 is when it came out.
Yes, see, there you go. See, that poster of Demi and Patrick, that's really supposed to be Whoopi and Demi.
Oh. He's kissing on her neck?
Yes, all up in it.
I want to see those deleted scenes.
Yes.
I like how they classify the genre on Wikipedia, American romantic fantasy / crime thriller.
Because it was. They had to find out who killed Patrick Swayze.
Was it Whoopi?
It was not, unfortunately, Whoopi. It was it some... Was a-
It was another member of The View.
It was another member of The View. It was probably Barbara Walters. Barbara Walters. So. But yeah, Steve Rosenfeld, it was a great class. It was like 6 weeks. And how it wrapped up was that we got to perform at a, quote, major comedy club. So my debut was at, it was Caroline's.
Oh, nice.
Caroline's or Stand Up New York. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was one of those two. It will, and
okay, so I take back what I said. Stand-up classes could be good.
Well, you know, I think for me it was like when you learn how to draw. Like, you learn how to draw when you're in, like, high school or whatever, or elementary school, and they teach you basic stuff about color and perspective and all of that jazz. And from there, you have to take it and make it what you will. I think that's the deal.
Yeah,
you have
to make of course. I see so that. They taught you actually how to structure the joke and stuff.
Yeah, the traditional setup punch type of thing. And so I think initially...
Because back then, you back know, those they were days, doing one-liners for vaudeville shows.
Waka, waka, waka. Yeah.
They're like, President Gay, you know how hot it is outside? How hot is it? President James Garfield needed 3 blocks of ice to keep him warm today.
So I what I wanted to do was to this girl's what Taft was doing to me all this time. you get what I'm talking about. So I saw Theodore Roosevelt, big man. They call him the Bucking Rider. What's he riding? What can hold him? You know what I'm talking about.
I love it.
You know, that was the original that. How hot is it? You know, people say, oh, how hot. I swear to God, the origin of that joke was that President James Garfield was shot. All right. And they made this, the first air conditioning system was put in the White House to keep him cool while as he recovered, and it functioned on blocks of ice, right? So the joke would be like, oh boy, it's hot today. And people go, how hot is it? It was so hot, President James Garfield needed 5 blocks of ice to keep him cool. That's the original how hot is it joke.
I love it. It's like history.
I learned that on the History Channel.
History of everything channel.
I know a bunch of little tidbits about things. I used to watch a lot of History Channel. Like I used to watch just marathons of modern marvels.
So
I know all this weird shit, and like I'm pretty good at Jeopardy.
See, I love that. I'm very good at that too.
God, this very episode obscure. Is just flying by.
It is. Like,
I notice this happens in my life when I talk to you, not just on the podcast. But I'll be like, it's fucking 1 a.m. Like, what the fuck? The show ended at 10:30. I didn't even think we were talking for that long.
I feel like I'm fulfilled and disappointed at the same time. This is great.
I know. You're great.
But how disappointed? How is that disappointing?
I don't know.
That's just your own insecurity speaking.
Probably.
Yeah. Because you're so like, I should have been there.
We went up at Caroline's.
I went up at Caroline's.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I still, you know, I learned, you know, kind of, sort of, the structure of writing. But when it came to actually, like, performing at places, I had not yet made that leap. I would do these bringer shows, these awful, awful bringer shows. And in New York, you could find all the clubs have bringer shows.
Yeah.
So I would perform regularly at New York Comedy Club, which is basically, I don't know if it's still is there, but back then it was pretty much a crap hole. It was horrible. I mean, they had people like Andrew Dice Clay going through during its heyday, but basically, I would perform there because they had the lowest bringer minimum quota.
What?
You know, like stand up New York, Caroline's, you would have to bring like 15 to 20 people.
Holy shit.
What?
Yeah, people, that's why I find it so funny when people in Miami, like comics, are like, oh, it's the bringer show. I can't believe I have to bring like 8 people. I'm like, are you kidding me? And freaking Caroline's is like 25. And you're,
Jesus.
God darn it if you only brought 20, you know? So at New York Comedy Club, I think you had to bring like 5. Like 4 or 5 or something like that. And then on top of that, I think it was like Saturday, like 6 or 7 o'clock, like some awful time. Like people are still not even rolled out of bed yet. Just like, what? We're going to a comedy show? What is this? And so I'd go there. I would perform there so often that the comic who was running the bringer show was like, okay, you know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do a bringer show. You can go to these things called open mics. You can go to open mic and they'll give you as much time as you want to everything. You don't have to come here. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, that's how it works. But the thing I think that really clinched it for me is like, even before I took the class with Steve Rosenfeld, just for the heck of it, this is when I was taking that awful class through college. I was like, let me check out the quote New Talent Night at New York Comedy Club. Let me just see what this is about. Because it's one of those things every comic has in the beginning. Like, oh, they're doing it. I can do this too. That's passing for comedy. I know I can do better. And so I go there. I mean, I go to watch. And first comic goes up. Well, the MC, horrible. First, second comic. And then they were like, hey, you guys, guess who dropped in? Tracy Morgan. Tracy Morgan what? Dropped in. Yeah, because that happens all the time in New York. And
I didn't know Tracy Morgan was doing comedy back in 1859.
He's been doing stand-up. And he's like, he's hella filthy. Too.
Back in 59? Yeah.
Back in 1859?
So what I wanted to do to this girl was what I wanted to do to Taft. What was Taft was doing to me.
You know when you're loading your musket up? When you're loading it and you're packing in the gunpowder and then it goes off and you're like, well, great, now I don't have a nose. Got to call the field surgeon.
I'm Brian Fellows.
It was exactly like that. And then he went up there and he destroyed for like 45 minutes. He just went up there.
So, who's see, the that's the great thing about the Miami comedy scene. Mm. It's like, okay, let's say like you're a titan, you know, you come in, you're like, it's Casa de Jaja or something, and you're like, Daniel Ruskin, hey, guess who came in? Rhett Thompson dropped by. He'll never do that, and you're not going to go up, bam, 45 minutes. Yeah. Oh, wait, you guys got to go home now? Well, I did my time. I'm out.
And then do it. Yeah, and then for that poor sap who had to go on after.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Exactly, but stuff like that happens all the time in New York. So, and I remember seeing Tracy Morgan, and I was like, oh, that's I need to do that. I want to do that. That's what I want to do.
That's why you sound exactly like Tracy Morgan.
Exactly, just now. Like, I want to do that. And but he was amazing. He was amazing, and I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. So,
are you from New York?
I am not from New
York. Oh, you're from Ohio.
I am from Ohio. I'm from Akron, Ohio, land of LeBron. Hello.
You could keep them.
Yeah.
Keep them.
They need them. God bless them. But I went to New York for school, mm-hmm. And then I just ended up staying. And then I started my fledgling comedy life there. That's where I started and stuff. And then I was like, oh, I'm about to have a kid. So I was like, New York is very expensive. Yeah. So I was like, that's not the place where I want to raise a kid. I didn't want my kid's bedroom being the foyer of our apartment. That happens. Yeah. That happens. I know people who are like making six figures, and because they wanted to live in the right place, their kid's bedroom was the foyer. And Jesus. I was like, yes, I kid you not. And wow. I was like, I don't want that. I want grass and trees and all that jazz for my kids.
Oh, God, so lame.
Yeah, so I came down here because of family. And then because of that, for like 5 years, I took an involuntary hiatus. Because I just couldn't, like, I was juggling a day job, and I wanted to be a good mom and all that stuff.
All that lame, stupid stuff that gets in
green. Horrible.
It's either comedy or bust.
Because you're a selfish, shitty person.
Don't you want to be famous? Be a comedian.
I know, and it would eat at me, like, every single day. I was like, oh, my God, what am I doing? I would see, like, people that I was at open mics with. Like getting on TV, and I was like, "Oh crap! This is these are."
You said you saw
like,
Nick Kroll, right? You'd see him around.
Nick Kroll, like, because I used to
wait. Nick Kroll.
Nick Kroll,
the guy that does gentle comedy.
The Kroll show.
No, like it's what it's called. Like I think that's the official name.
Is that what it's called? He has all the characters and all. I don't doubt it because like when the very first open mic I did was this open mic they would call it was on the Lower East Side. It was called. Tuesday Night Trainwreck. And I loved it.
You're gonna go down
name,
to a Tuesday
man.
Night train wreck. I got a great 5 minutes on my crane.
It was awesome, man. And like one of the guys who's hosting it is comic who's like working comic now. Like his name is Joey Gay, and he was on Last Comic Standing a couple years ago. But my very first time, I went with one of my work buddies, and he didn't even want to be a fucking comic. But his name, the way it would work is that you would pay $5. You would pay $5 to do this open mic, and they would give you 5 minutes. $5, 5 minutes, or something. Yeah, $5, 5 minutes. And they would give you a drink ticket. And they would draw your name out of a hat. And of course, my freaking friend who doesn't even want to be a comic gets picked, like, I don't know, fifth, something. I mean, I'm talking about out of, like, 25, 30 people. Who gets picked last? Moi. I was like, I can't believe no one's here. And so I went up and I still did my thing. And they were like, don't worry, because you were here last, you get to be first next week. So,
so that's why you do the thing.
That's why, yeah.
I had made that connection too, and I'm like, oh wow, look, the story, it connects.
It all connects.
It has come full circle. Whoopi Goldberg is embracing you, and the story has come full circle.
I feel her warm dreads around me right now.
I hope when I run a room, like I'm at the mic, and then just Rhett's ghost, it's like right there around the mic, it's like, oh. I feel it. Circling, is that you, Whoopi?
Circling around.
But
you.
Really, it really is Richie Negara.
You're like, what the fuck? Like, why is it so claustrophobic in here? Yeah, but the train wreck was right across. Like, you would hit the train wreck, and then right around the corner was this bar called B3's. And B3's is like you would see people like Nick Kroll, and you would see Chelsea Peretti, and you would see, like, that's when Chelsea Peretti was just like, she was just a chick. She was just some white girl that was like hilarious. And I remember she would do this bit and...
Well, we should... Could you call up Chelsea Peretti? Maybe, like, get her on... Yo, I'm Rhett. I used to do the Tuesday train wreck.
There are so few women doing... I mean, even now, like, you know, I look at the Miami scene and there's so few people who are female that I know are female doing comedy. But even then, there were very, very few women doing it. So, you know, you stand out and she was hilarious. She was hilarious.
No, Chelsea Peretti. Yeah, Chelsea Peretti is hilarious.
So I would see, like, but Nick Kroll was, like, he was one of those comics that people would stop. They would stop. They would be like, oh, Nick Kroll is doing his thing. Let's leave the bar and go to the back room and see what Nick Kroll is doing. He would always do weird shit.
I love character stuff kills me, dude. Like watching Freddie Stebbins, like.
Yeah.
Fuck, or like Randy, you know, Randy who does Rudy Vanderhall.
Yeah.
Like, he just, like, I fucking lose it when I see character stuff like that. That's well done.
Like that Richard Pryor thing where he goes, where he like just sits down on the stool,
holds
the mic real lazily, and then does like this character.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that as well.
And Reggie, that character that you do of the nerdy black guy is just.
I'm glad. I can't wait till people find out my real character, my real persona.
It kills every time.
Just my Huey P. Newton and Malcolm X combination.
But you know, you were like, you've pretty much seen my progression from because the second show that I did in Miami. I mean, I pretty much would say it's my second show because I did it 4 times in college, and 7 years later I picked it up again.
That's
but
crazy.
It's like nothing, you know.
It's crazy.
Like doing it 4 times and then it's like I started all over again. So the second show was at fucking Kill Your Idol, Alex Mauricio's room. Mm. And I remember I met you outside and then the music started to play and then I was like, "Hey, I got a pottery studio back at my house." No, but yeah, and you told me about your room, Sunday Night Smash Up. But God, that room is so brutal, KYI. That was my second show, my second one, and I felt really bad about myself after that.
No, you were fine.
And I went there with I was there with my ex-girlfriend and like her friend and my like a really good another really good friend of mine.
That's bad.
I'm just like, ah, I'm like, duh. And I did. This is so embarrassing. I did crowd work to my friend.
Oh, wow.
Because it was loud. You know, that's a hard room to do.
Yeah.
Even if you're like experienced. But yeah, and then I would always go to Sunday Night Smash Up.
It was a good.
I remember Sunday Night Smash Up.
It was a good room. And it was a good room.
Maloko, you know.
Yes.
Maloko.
Also,
you
a good
gave
room.
Me my first book show, actually, which was the Valentine's Day show.
Are you serious?
That was my first book show, too. Out the Side of KYI.
Yeah. No, my first book show was Maloko, and
you're really special to us, right?
I was such a spurg for that show. I'm like, oh, it's a Valentine's Day show.
You were very professional. I was like,
I got there early and everything.
I was like, this guy is gonna be so let down.
Is that the one where the microphone, the APPA broke?
Yeah, that was.
I remember talking to you about that one, and you were like, oh man.
Yeah. You know what? My thing is like. I have been to some less than ideal circumstance open mics type of situation, like in terms of the lighting is bad, the equipment is bad, the sound is bad, the owner is a dick, you know, like there's a lot of stuff going on. But I always was like, you know, that experience of Joey Gay and there was another guy running with him, Damien, like Joey and Damien, they were always cool. They were always cool. And I was like, you know what? No matter how hilarious, like, I mean, they were amazing. but they would always be fair. They would always be fair, and they were always good to the comics.
Who's this?
These were the guys who ran the train wreck.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? If I ever get to the point where I run a room, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be fair.
Well, you fucking failed miserably, Rhett, because you are just a tyrant.
The system of that you use where you draw like the tickets,
I like that.
It's great. Like that's a great system. Because a lot of times you'll like, you know, you'll go to some place and it's like, did you get first? I don't think you got first. You know, it's very loose.
Yeah.
But the raffle, very solid. Like I like that.
I feel like you can't go wrong with that. And then the worst thing is like when you go to a room and the host is drunk. The host is drunk and you're like, wait a minute. I'm not the type of person that's gonna ride you because I know what it's like to run a room, so I'm not gonna be the one to say, Am I up next?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be that person. But I'm like, damn it, are you serious? Like I got here at such and such a time and you totally forgot me. Like I've had that happen too.
Oh god. That happened to me the other day. I was like, oh, so like just curious, where am I? Because I always ask because of my camera. I want to set it up. Like I don't want to just be scrambling for it. And the host looked at the list. He's like, oh, I don't have you on here. I'm like, I'm the second person to sign up.
Yeah. I feel like that's so unprofessional.
That happens to me like at I'm not gonna say. I don't want to start. It
happens to you at a mic.
It happens to me at a mic and at so
the
many
the
Flubble
Booble room at the Schnuck and Fucking
the Electric Boogaloo at the
and the Schnubble Booble band. Yeah.
What I want to say about the raffle is that it also forces everyone to be there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's like really genius. Like it forces everyone to stay. You can't. When you know you're six, you're like, all right, I'm going to dip out. I don't want to see this guy. You just stay there. But everyone stays there because I could be next. And you don't.
Right.
No one wants to run into the room and then like, oh, okay, I'm next.
Right.
So at Electric Boogaloo, I, you know, I get there early. And then there's like crazy rules in place against comics. And then, you know, I try to, you know, I don't keep my head down, stay in my lane. I'm not going to be a jerk. I know it's a lot of pressure to run a room. I know the room to your extent is really big, so I'm not going to like, you know, shake you up for that. And bam, performing at 2 a.m.
Yeah, that to me, it's like, you know, people don't understand, like this is show business, not show art. And people can say whatever the crap they want to say about like, oh, it's Miami, or oh, your room is like in the back of some crappy bar in the middle of like Oshkosh vagina. I don't know. But the thing is, you have to learn how to be professional early on. Yeah. You know, it's like lifting weights or whatever. You gotta train that muscle of like, you know,
gotta
try
have the
to
proper form, you know?
Yeah.
You hurt your back.
Yeah, show up reasonably on time. If you're gonna be running late, tell the host. If you're gonna get the light, you know, respect the light. Find out what time, when the light is, how much time do you get? Yeah. You know, like how far can you push it? Like if you really don't see the light, you know, then be apologetic. You know, be kind to your fellow comics, because just like in the examples I gave you, like not to like name drop or whatever, because you never know who that person is going to be. The same person that you're going to be a dick to today might be like, you know,
Nick Kroll.
Nick Kroll.
What did you do to Nick Kroll? I want to hear this story. What did you do to Nick Kroll?
I did absolutely. I think at that time, Nick Kroll was already writing for like MTV, I think. I think was his deal. I think that's what it was, like him and it was a couple other random guys. Like you never knew exactly what he did because they, you know, like comic. It's weird because like up there, like, you know, you go to an open mic and there could be people that they just start doing comedy like 30 minutes ago. And then there's people who are like veterans who've been doing it for 25. Like, what's his face? What's his name? Ed Helms came to the train wreck.
Ed Helms.
Helms, the one with the Hangover, the one who was played Dennis.
Oh, who, like, he was on The Office too.
Yeah. So this was like when he first was on The Daily Show. So he was like, quote, new in town type of thing.
Okay.
And I remember like, I was like, wow, this guy came to the train wreck. You know, this is crazy, you know, because by that time he had to pay $7 for 5 minutes and you got a drink, you know.
Like the dude that's on The Daily Show is paying $7.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they didn't like screw him over for the $7. But, you know, it's like you got to be respectful to people because you never know, you know.
It's funny because Christine's brother lives in L.A. and he was saying how like, you know, because you always got to be, because you never know who you're talking to. And in L.A., it's so funny because you, like, really never know who you're talking to, because he was at this bar with some people, and there was this guy that was, like, a friend of a friend, and this guy was, like, shit-faced, all right? and there was like an Emmy party going on in the other part of the bar. So this bouncer goes up to her brother and is like, excuse me. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, I know what this is going to be about. He's like, there's a gentleman wearing cutoff shorts and for some reason is soaking wet from the waist down, wearing some lady's boots or something like that. Like, do you know who he is? And like, he's like, oh, yeah, that's because like in L.A., it's like we don't know who he is. Like, he could be like a director's son. So like no one, you don't want to piss him off. So it's like, so you're always nice, you know. And I think that's also like I see that, you know, I see some quote unquote L.A. fakeness. Like I went to some show and I met a few comics that like it's like this fakeness where as in Miami, if someone's fake, 99% of the time, it belies the fact that they're a complete shithead.
Yeah, you know?
But in this, it was just like you keep up that professional cordialness all the time. Not necessarily because you're hiding the fact that you're a horrible person or something. It's just like you never know who, or like you could go to some open mic that like some agent's assistant, like you don't know, you know? So I guess that's my
point. You just got to learn now. You just got to learn now.
I try to be as perfect because like I want to do it. Like I never when I started doing it, it's like after I finished cancer treatment and shit, I'm like, you know, I don't got that much time left on this earth, even though I probably have just as much time as everybody else. But still, I'm like, oh, shit, like people, you die and then like you can't do more things and you get old and then you won't be able to do it. So I want to be serious about it. So like I went into it. I'm like, I'm going to do this for my living. So I try to be professional.
No, it's very true. Like, and I had the thing, you know, I didn't have cancer, but I had gotten really sick. And, you know, when I was starting to do comedy back in like my kid had just turned 5 and I was like, okay. I had almost got.
She could fend
point.
For herself.
Yeah, I was like,
here's the phone.
Yeah,
call the police.
Exactly.
Something happens.
Do this thing. But it was to the point I was like, okay, it's time, because I was trying to wrap my head around thinking like, well, maybe I should just let it go. Like maybe, but I couldn't. Like, you see how like I can say the words maybe I should let it go. Yeah. Like I couldn't wrap my head around. Internally saying maybe I should let it go as a complete thought. Yeah. Like I couldn't wrap my head around that. So I was like, oh, I can't just not. And then the thing that was the deal breaker for me, or deal clincher for me, is like I have Graves' disease, which is like the hyperthyroidism.
Sounds pretty.
It sounds awesome.
Wait, sounds pretty. Wait. Sounds pretty. Grave.
How funny. Yeah, for me it's like, okay, it's the same thing that Missy Elliott has. Like Missy Elliott. So basically, and I guess a lot of Asians get it. So maybe Missy Elliott is Asian. But basically, long story short, my family had this contest. Mm-hmm. Everyone was packing on some pounds. We're like, hey, we're gonna have this contest and see who can get in shape fastest. Like, you know, lose weight, get in shape, blah, blah. And so this is when I first started doing P90X, and I was like, oh, this is great. And I couldn't understand, like, you know, people would say, hey, you know, you look so good. Like, you lost so much weight. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm doing P90X. I'm watching my weight. So, but literally what was happening, I was eating, and it would just, the food would come right out of me. Like it was nothing. Like, and I was like, oh, I'm just being regular. Of course. Yeah. But then I noticed that I would get cold really easily. And my nails, which are pretty much like concrete, my nails were breaking like really, like easily. Like it was like weird. Like, maybe I was just doing something rough. Like I do a lot of stuff like cooking and hand stuff. And I was like, well, maybe I'm just being too rough. Maybe I need lotion. And then I would get really tired. Really, really, like, exhausting tired. Like, so I would go to my day job. This is when I was doing the whole corporate America thing. I would have this long commute, and I would fall asleep on the train and on the bus. And I was like, well, of course, it's because I have this long commute. And then it was like I would barely be able to, like, stay awake past 7 o'clock. Like, I was just, like, and when I would lay, when I would sleep like a coma. Like I couldn't get enough rest. I would wake up and I would be like, I need more. And so what really did it, what was the thing that really did it for me? Like I, like literally my clothes were falling off of me. Like it was like, I couldn't, like I was getting smaller and smaller sizes and I was having a hard time with the workout, but I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't do it. So what happened? I can't remember exactly. It will come to me, but I ended up going to the doctor, and or I had like a routine test, or and my heart was beating really fast. Like I would sit at rest like the way I am right now, but you would feel my pulse, and it would be like I just finished a marathon or a sprint. And so they pretty much broke it down to me and said, "Hey, we're going to do these tests, but you have." You have hyperthyroidism, which basically is when your metabolism, your thyroid gland is shooting out so much that it thinks you need to burn off all this energy. But the problem is that your heart starts beating too fast. Like everything starts speeding up, yeah. And the danger is that it's speeding up so much that you're gonna have a heart attack and you're gonna die. So the opposite of that is what they try to do with my treatments is to give me hypothyroidism, which is when your thyroid gland is so slowed down that now when you eat, it's like your body doesn't want to let go of the energy, mm-hmm. And so now that's why people put on a lot of weight. So, like, when people say, "Oh, I got a thyroid problem," no, you don't, bitch. You don't know how to. I know what that is. No, you don't. Nor would I wish this on anyone. But in the course of like the treatments and stuff, and because basically they tried to give you medication, they tried to get you to like eat and exercise and control it that way, and then they tried to give you medication, and if that doesn't work, which didn't for me because I was getting all these funky side effects.
Yeah.
That's like I found out I was allergic to like random stuff like Benadryl. I was like, who's allergic to that? Like antihistamines. I'm allergic to that. So literally I took this Benadryl because it was like combating something. And I literally called my doctor. I was like, my fingers are swelling up in front of me. They look like kielbasas. Like literally I could watch my, I would sit here and I would get hives and I would draw. I would like carve my name and it would just slowly rise.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like, this is kind of distressing and cool at the same time. And so that wasn't working. She was like, okay, we're going to have to give you a radioactive iodine treatment. So basically, by that point, like it's basically a pill and it's supposed to kind of like help kill your thyroid gland. And so I remember having to take it at Baptist Hospital. And by that time, I was so cold. Like I think it was like Black Friday. It was like, yeah, so it was like what, day after Thanksgiving?
Yeah, November 25th.
Yeah, so we're talking about it's like 85 degrees in Miami, and mm-hmm. I felt like it was 40. I had like,
holy shit.
I had like a hoodie on, sweatshirt on. My hair was still long, but it just didn't have its luster. My skin was like very gray. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into Baptist, and I was dressed so warmly. I had lost so much weight. I had my hair in a kerchief, and I just wanted to get this thing over with. And I remember you have to actually go through like the cancer ward, like wherever they get those treatments, you have to go.
Yeah,
and
the oncology unit. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So I saw this chick and I was like, she looks just like me, except she's got the real deal. And we did one of those head nods that like black people give each other, like black dudes are like, what's up? And it was like, what's up? But I was like, she gave me the what's up. And I was like, I got to say what's up. But she thinks I have cancer. I don't have cancer, but it's too much. We're just passing in the hall. Why do I have to explain myself cancer, to her?
Cancer patients, if someone gives me a what's up, and they don't have cancer, I get really pissed.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to have that fight. And then she was probably going to be too weak and her T cells were down. Whatever. Anyway, so I go and I take this treatment and I had to stay away from my family for a couple of days because you're like basically.
Oh, yeah. My mom did that. She was radioactive too.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did that thing too. Yeah. She had a like. They do that to a lot of people now. It's
they
like
do that. A lot of women get it.
Pre-thyroid cancer or whatever. They get it taken out. So did you get your thyroid taken out?
I did not because I'm hoping to like keep it under control. Like hopefully
when was this? This isn't going to date you.
No.
It's this like everything came in glass vials and all the surgeon was wearing was a butcher smock.
I told him I went to the snake oil salesman.
Like,
rub this tincture on you.
How much whiskey do I got to drink, Doc?
Put you in the operating theater.
Well, my kid, I think she was still in, I think she was like maybe in kindergarten or first grade. And she's in, she's going into fifth grade now. So what was like 4 years, 5 years? But okay. I remember like when I was like all swollen up before getting the final treatment and I was just so miserable and my face was swollen up. And I remember being in so much pain, like literally your joints are in pain and I couldn't eat and I was too exhausted and I couldn't do anything. Yeah. And I remember having that moment of with God and I said, you know what? You can kill me. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with that. I'm ready to die right now. Like, please, when you're in so much pain, you're like, you know what? I don't want to live my life like this. So, you know what? Either kill me now, but if you take this away from me, I promise, like, I will do what I need to do on this earth. I promise, like, I will, you know, like, no effing around. Can you say that to God? No effing around. Like, I'm not going to eff around anymore. Like, you know, I'm going to get it together because, you know, my life is wasted right here. So if you take this away from me, then I will do what I need to do, what I was meant to do.
And here you are wasting it on comedy instead of being what you were meant to do, which was a horticulturist. Little do you know that God is up there. He's like, she fucking said she would do what now she's not a horticulturist. She could be the best horticulturist in the world. And she's just wasting it. I don't know. Why is she on this podcast?
I just keep missing my calling. I keep missing it. So, yeah. I'm good. Like, I can feel like it's coming back, though. I feel like it's coming back because I feel like I'm getting tired. Like, I've noticed it over the past year.
Our condition's getting grave again.
Grave, yes. Like that and getting really tired and feeling very cold. But then I'm like, well, I am getting more mature. Old women always
You were around
get
when
cold.
Oxygen started out. Slow your roll, Red.
Back when I was a kid, the nitrogen oxygen mixture was completely different. We had wasps the size of your head.
Exactly. It was well, that is,
so what's the solution if it comes back? Like, it's just take
they're,
out your thyroid?
They're going to have to take it out. They're gonna have to take it out. But I'm trying to bad. Like, you know, to be honest with you, I really haven't been taking care of myself the way I should be. Yeah. Because really I should be more aggressive with diet and exercise. Primarily
shouldn't
diet.
We all? Yeah. I'm like, I've there's so many things I should be doing. And last night I had a quesadilla and a quesarito. I had an adventure with Christine last night.
Ah.
Me and Christine have lots of fun together.
Oh, well, that's good.
I went up to, I don't want to take the focus away from this because this is actually really interesting. This is way more interesting about my story about drinking too much beer last night and then eating a quesarito.
Beer. You got it.
Which, by the way, is God's gift to man.
Yeah,
a quesarito.
What is
holy
that?
Shit.
That sounds like
it's a burrito with a quesadilla wrapped around it.
Okay, that can't be legal. That's wrong.
So good.
Rhett, it's very wrong. Be very happy it is legal.
Yesterday I was eating so good, and then I figured out between the beer and the quesaritos, it was. I consume like 1,800 calories.
Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
And before that, I ate like the whole day. I had eaten like a piece of toast with some cream cheese, whatever.
Oh,
it was
God.
Bad.
Now, it's like back in the day, they would have said he ate enough for 10 men. That's what they would have said. They would have called it.
Literally, back then, with the caloric intakes of America back then, it literally would be 10 men. People were skinnier back then.
Yeah, but you gotta live life, man. My thing is like, look, okay, it's one thing if I did something super self-destructive. Like, I'm not into drugs. Like, I do drink. I feel like, look, if I drink, you know, as long as I'm responsible, like, I don't want to, like, be so drunk that I... Yeah. I've
never seen you drunk before.
I have been very drunk.
No, I'm sure you have, but I haven't seen you. You know, actually, it's funny because Jackie Barron, like, I was shit-faced outside of Funky Buddha talking to her about Christine for, like, a half...
Like, oh, that's awesome. That's even
better.
That's
what you do when you're drunk, by the way. You just talk about Christine and you're awesome. She's the best ever.
You get drunk, like some guys get drunk and are just like talking to all the women. I just get like more monogamous.
Oh, that's sad.
Sad. Fuck you. That's sad. It's a beautiful it's our beautiful relationship.
I'm gonna go buy a ring right now.
Dude, Mike, you do this every time, bro.
No, I promise. I'm gonna buy a ring.
Dude, I told you the jewelry stores close at 7, Mike. It's like, no, it's gotta be a 24-hour one, bro.
Oh my God.
Let's go to the punch shop.
That's
not the ring for Christine. Christine's the love.
Macklemore
woman.
Fucking wraps
it. You
should
totally buy her, like, you should get really drunk and buy her a pawn shop ring and not realize why you have this.
I should do a prank. I should do a prank engagement. That'd be hilarious.
No.
That'd be a great viral video.
Give her a pimp cup. Like, not no, thinking that it was a ring. Like, I don't know why.
I know, you know, I love Christine because when you talk about marriage, it doesn't scare the living shit out of me.
Oh, well, that's
lovely. Any of my other girlfriends, that would be a terrifying prospect.
Oh, that's good. Well, but not her. I think it helps that you're living together. You're living together, right?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, I think that's, they are. That's like, wow, where he has an inordinate amount of things in her residence.
I take my podcasting setup in and out.
No, babe, I'm just going to do my podcast in your place. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny though because we live together, but it never seemed like I would tell people that, mostly girls, I would tell that, and they'd be like, wow, it's a big transition. And I'm never felt like that. I was just like, yeah, whatever, fuck it.
So it's a natural progression then.
Because it's funny because I was just moving. I'm like, yeah, my mom's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just moving more stuff into Christine's house. I'm like, oh, I'm moving into Christine's house. No, but it's the shit, dude. Like, I couldn't have it any other way because I want to see her as much as, like, that's the number one thing about, like, with comedy. Like, I want to come home. Not because she's on my ass about it, but just because I miss her, you know?
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I like to spend time with her.
That's beautiful.
We're getting that pottery studio in. We're getting Whoopi Goldberg. Oh,
darling. Yeah, I don't know how to do, I don't know how to sing Unchained Melody, because that's what they played.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I knew it. I had a good house remix of that song, but that's all I know about.
Yeah, that's what you should
do. About
you
that.
Totally do that.
But so they only got to take out your thyroid? That's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, my mom got it taken out. She didn't know how to explain it, though, because, like, you know, my mom is, she's, like, older. Like, older, older. Like, I have friends whose moms have died because they're just black. So, but my mom will not go anywhere.
That's interesting. How does that happen?
Yeah, I'm like,
just because they're black?
Yeah, because they're black. Like, I found another one on Facebook, and this sounds very, like, insensitive.
Well, I feel like I need a more explanation. Like what?
Well, a lot of things happen when you're black.
Yeah, black people die early. They don't have a good shelf life. And
because I know that black people are at higher risk for stroke and stuff like, and heart disease.
Yeah, they don't take care of themselves.
And
they,
then police brutality.
Not even.
I wasn't gonna say it. I was waiting for one of you to say it. I wasn't gonna be like, "Yeah, you get shot when you're not armed." Like,
this,
no,
this
I'm not gonna.
This is very true, though. But, like, you know, a lot of people, they just don't take care of themselves. A lot of them have a lot of diseases that probably are preventable, like diabetes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, cancer, you can't. You know,
you can prevent it to an extent.
But
there's certain things you do that, like, will put you at higher risk. Like, I heard, like, processed red meats put you at higher risk.
Yeah.
You know, like sausages and shit, stuff like that. Like, you can have it every once, but or I don't know, maybe that you can't ever have it. I'm not a doctor, but
there are black people that probably eat a pickled sausage probably every other day.
Yeah,
and they come in a big vat. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's with a big the red vat. Pig on
it.
Yeah,
like a red pig. First of all, the sausage itself, the wrapper is red.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay, that can't be right.
You should. I don't think you could. Can you consume that?
I think you can. It's like
it's not like the wax on Gouda where you can't.
No, they're not going to be fancy like that. We're black people. Come on, Reggie.
Reggie, I think you just...
I don't like
he lost some black points by saying...
I don't like...
It's like, is it like the wax on Gouda?
I don't appreciate...
I know that's not consumable. The gentleman at Whole Foods told me that the rind...
I do not appreciate...
I usually enjoy the rind.
On a fine brie, I do. With some
See,
wine.
Your limited view of blackness... is what's keeping me down. Yeah. All right.
Can the black fact that you're saying I don't appreciate, I don't appreciate. Come on.
I can't.
I don't appreciate.
Y'all are boxing me into these holes, and I can't enjoy Gouda. Can't enjoy Gouda. Cheese is great. All right.
Cheese is great, and also killing black people.
That is true.
A lot of black people are
not fucking
even
with his Gouda. You fucking with his Gouda.
But they're not. They're eating American
Got
cheese,
that
which Iberico. Is just oil.
We should do a think piece on this. Why black people need to start fucking with Gouda and stop fucking with cheddar cheese.
Yes. Not even cheddar. I'm telling you, it's American cheese. I remember
cheddar's horrible for you too.
Well,
I just made for Artistic Vibes. I bake for them, and I made these crackers. That are like, I'm going to give you guys one, all right?
One cracker
Thanks. For you to try. Because it's for them, you know? I make it for them. Because I'll bake, and I don't want to eat all of it, so I'll just give it to AV because you know, they're the shit, so.
No, I get
but,
it.
But yeah, they're like gourmet cheeses. But I like looked, like I was making this, and I'm like, this is just cheese, butter, and fucking flour.
Hey.
Like, that's it.
But those are, quote, natural ingredients. I mean, what?
Natural to kill you. It's like so much calories.
It's better than oil. It's better than, like, you know.
Yeah, I guess. But it's, like, got a lot of fat and shit in it. But
I don't know. I knew a lot of people growing up, like, back in Ohio, that everything was, like, white rice, white pasta. Processed cheese, Velveeta.
I think
I'm going to have the good stuff, Velveeta. Like, what? That's not even real cheese. What are you talking about?
That's cheese product.
Yes, and they don't care. There's cheese, and then
you know,
they wonder why they're dead at 55. So
my sister works with you know, foster kids and stuff. And now she is eats hot Cheetos all the time.
Oh, see, that's bad. And Takis.
And Takis.
Oh.
She loves hot Cheetos and Takis. Now she's like, Mike, we got to stop at this gas station so I can get my hot Cheetos and Takis. Like, I can't.
Hot Cheetos in my high school, middle school were like cigarettes in jail. Like, and it was such a weird phenomenon.
I just love absorbing the African American experience with you guys. Like,
well, you know, you've lost her if she asks for a grape flavored black and mild. Then you know that she's
thankfully
gone.
She doesn't smoke, she's but yeah, gone. That would be grape flavored black and mild.
She, get that. Her, she gets her, a backwood
for her weed. You know? Yeah,
backwood.
A swish of sweets.
A swish of sweets. A Dutch man.
You
don't
smoke.
My
sister
split.
You
don't split a black and mild.
No,
you don't.
My sister had to explain to me what it meant, like, you know those Auntie Fee videos of that lady who cooks, that like that,
yes, oh my gosh,
Auntie Fee, it's this lady, she's like she's like this she's like this black lady, and she's like she cooks these like hood ass meals, right? Like these like you got to see it. And she's like nigga, put the camera over here, like soup, like oh abrasive, super
imagine
funny.
Imagine if Rachel Ray all right, imagine if Rachel Ray just, you know, came from a very rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a shoddy, shaky cam.
Oh,
imagine if
God.
Rachel Ray was from Liberty City, pretty
oh
much.
Oh, my God.
And so my sister had to explain to me what the money, like, when the money come in, like, what that means, because I didn't know. Like, so my Jewish, my blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jewish sister, she's like, oh, when the money come in. I'm like, what's that mean? She's like, you know, when the money come in, like when you get the welfare checks.
Oh, my God.
And I'm
oh
like, what
God.
Is that? And she's like, I know, you know. Like, my sister, she's, you know, she knows all these things that I don't, because she works with foster kids.
I love it.
Yeah. She loves those little kids. I think it's funny about that is, like, what she's doing is so much more altruistic than me. And if we both reach the pinnacles of our careers, no one will give a shit about her, but everyone will care about me, which I think is such an injustice, right?
This is very, very true.
It's like, so this guy talks about his dick masterfully. She saved, what, 300 kids? Fuck her. Who cares?
Exactly.
So, let her go eat her hot Cheetos and Takis.
You'll just have to tell enough dick jokes to donate to her foundation, and then that'll win your place in heaven or something.
That's how it works?
I don't know how Jewish God works. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, that's a section in Leviticus. And bring forth unto them, Moses, your jokes about your dick. Bring forth, render unto them your Jewish cock.
I have no idea how that works.
All right, guys. So you want to wrap it up? Or you got something else to say?
Yes. A lot of stuff happened this week, like Robin Williams.
Oh, so this is going to be another hour and a half-er?
No, I just want, like, Robin Williams.
Do you want to talk about Robin Williams?
Committed suicide. And yeah. Big ups to him. Great comedian, great actor, and Oscar nominated 4 times. I think he won like maybe 2 or 3, and just you know, very significant, and feel like it's just appropriate.
A lot of people are emotional about it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think like more so than any celebrity death that I've seen. Probably maybe because my newsfeed is all comics, but like literally, I had to get 12 posts down when he died. I had to go 12 posts before I found something that was not related to him.
Yeah.
Wow.
But just wanted to give like shout out and like condolences to the Williams family and to Robin Williams, because he was dealing with a lot of depression.
Yeah,
you know that as a comic, you see a lot of that.
Still very much in shock about that. I still can't believe it.
I thought that was a prank at first.
Yeah, yeah. And what's crazy about it, like, I heard about it from some of my day job.
Someone
folks.
Texted me.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I saw Billy Corbin posted about it on Facebook.
Yeah, that's what's crazy about it. It's like hearing, like, and what's crazy about they heard about it. Like, it's interesting to hear comedy news from non-comics who got their news from social media.
Yeah.
You know, because they can't believe it. And then, you know, their perspective, because they're seeing it as a non-performer.
Yeah.
And they don't know that I perform. But their whole thing was like, yeah, but he had a lot of money. He was famous. He had a lot of money. I don't understand why he would kill himself.
Yeah, that's
people don't get how much sadness there is in comedy. Like, you have to have some fucked up thing happen to you, or multiple fucked up things, I think, before like you know, there's some point in your childhood that some shit went wrong at some point. I don't know if you guys feel that way.
I don't know. I mean, I guess was it? It's either Sophocles. Aristotle, if you like the origins of theater, if you look at the origins of the, it's actually a book that I was required to read, but he talks about, he's one of the Greek philosophers, and he's like escaping, he's right on the tip of my tongue, but he talks about like drama and, you know, what makes drama. And this is like, you know, 1500, you know, BC type of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing about
what
it is
makes
like
drama, real
yeah,
housewives.
The whole cathartic. Going through catharsis, yeah. You know, catharsis, yeah, yeah. Like living, you know, you are showing pain, you know, you are living through pain. The audience, you are bringing pain to the stage so the audience can be cleansed. They are cleansed from their sins by living through your pain. Yeah. You know, and that's what that whole theater thing is. And what
you're
we do is
my
like
pain,
a,
everybody.
We're doing an offshoot
like,
of
I know that. I made it sound like it's like this, like, oh, you got to have a horrible traumatic. That's what a lot of cheap people think. But I'm saying, like, you got to go through some ostracization to want to be a comic, I feel. Like that comedy comes from somewhere like that.
Yeah.
You don't come, like, comedians don't come from the captain of the football team.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess so. I think
Chris Rock kind of put it like I was talking to a friend about it, and like he told me like what Chris Rock said was like Robin Williams was living at the point in his art, in his career that, you know, he couldn't handle it all. Like when you're a comedian, you're an observer. You're shining a light on certain things, and you're looking at things very differently, and that mixed with whatever else was going on with his life, like, you know, crushed him because he was standing, like you said, he was in the midst of all this pain, and he had this, you know, this great talent about him, and in a way to funnel it to you that was like wholly unique to him, and that just crushed him.
I think I was thinking about what happened. I was like, you know, who hasn't thought about killing themselves? I've thought about it many times. But you have to have, like, that balance. And this is no critique. And this is no, like, saying, oh, he was weak or he, you know, he did sin against God. I mean, that's ridiculous, you know, because we all have our own journey, our own path type of thing. But I don't know. A part of me doesn't want to play into that whole, oh, comics are all damaged goods, and that's what makes them all funny and blah 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 blah. You know, but we just see the world in differently.
And we're not special, by the way. Like, it's, like we see it differently, but you know,
in a much superior, better way than all of the other people. No, but there's like, you know, there's a little bit of pain there. It doesn't have to be like this. Like a lot of people think like, oh, like I saw some guy on Reddit posting about, he's like, I just realized I'm not fucked up enough to be a comic. It's like, dude, you don't got to be like super fucked up.
No,
it doesn't have to be like you were beaten as a child. It's just like you feel a little weird. You feel like an outsider a little bit, you know?
Well, I think
that's what gives you that perspective.
I think that's the problem with like careers in the arts, like whether you're like a singer or a comic or actor or whatever. Like people automatically romanticize the whole thing of like, oh, you must be through, you're going through so much pain and going through blah, and you have a jacked up childhood and blah. No one does. Do people say that about dentists? Do anyone say, oh, you must have smiled a lot, and, you know, you probably were very critical of people's facial expressions, or
no,
that's probably plastic surgery.
People think they know what the fuck they're talking about with art. I don't know, because they see it, you know, they don't see what's really behind it. They don't see the day-to-day process. They don't get what it's like, you know, like they don't understand what the fuck is going on, and they like to pretend like they do because it seems easy from the out. Like if you see a great comic, it seems like what they do is very easy, but it's like they don't see the 170 shows that come up to the special. You know, they just see the special.
But nor should they. There should be.
I'm not saying they should, but no, it's good that it is. But I'm saying that that'll lead to a lot of misunderstanding about it.
Yes. No. No.
Can I read? I want to read what you guys know. James Pate. Yes. James Pate, hey, another comic.
Woo!
broke his cherry at your room.
Yes, I love it when they break their cherry.
I'm so happy. I remember
he
was talking to me before he went up on stage, and like I remember he would like hang out sometimes. And I'm like, oh, are you gonna go up? He's like, yeah, it's gonna be my first time. And like I talked to him for a little while beforehand, and I was like, oh, if he sucks, it's gonna be really awkward. But he wasn't. He's good. You could tell he's got something there. But like he posted this great thing about Robin Williams, probably one of the most poignant things that I've read, and I'm gonna read it out loud. It's a little bit of an essay, but whatever. But it's a quote from Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. It's about when I heard about Robin, he says, when I heard about Robin Williams' death, the following excerpt is what immediately came to mind that I couldn't bring myself to post it yesterday. This is the day after he died. So he says, the so-called psychotically depressed person who tries to kill herself doesn't do so out of, quote, hopelessness or any abstract conviction that life's assets and debits do not square. And surely not because death seems suddenly appealing. The person in whom its invisible agony reaches a certain unendurable level will kill herself the same way a trapped person will eventually jump from the window of a building high rise. Make no mistake about people who leap from burning windows. Their terror of falling from a great height is still just as great as it would be for you or me standing speculatively at the same window just checking out the view, i.e. the fear of falling remains a constant. The variable here is the terror, the fire's flames. When the flames get close enough, falling to death becomes the slightly less terrible of the two terrors. It's not desiring the fall, it's the terror of the flames. And yet nobody down on the sidewalk looking up and yelling, don't, and hang on, can understand the jump. Not really. You'd have to have personally been trapped and felt flames to really understand a terror way beyond falling. It's pretty great, right?
Yeah, it is. That's awesome.
And I think on that note... Until next time, guys.
Yeah, it's a good wrap up. So that's a weird follow that up with our Twitter handles, but
on that poignant note.
So so Black and East Chicks, your podcast.
Black and East Chick is my podcast. Also,
is that your Twitter handle too?
Well, actually, I have two Twitters. The folks can hit me up at Rhett Thompson, RHETTTHOMPSON. And then I have a separate Twitter for the podcast. It's Black and East Pod. Because some pornographer has Black and East Chick.
Of course. It's the internet. Of course
yes,
they were.
Exactly. Of course.
And Reggie?
You can find me at Ratchet Score.
Ratchet Score?
Ratchet _ Reggie. And Instagram Black Dadaist.
And you can find me on Mike Marianoff on Twitter, Mike Marianoff Comedy on Facebook. And I got a show coming up. I will be at Gigi's Music Cafe for the Comedy Takeover, hosted by Jackie Barron on Friday. Go to my Facebook, Mike Marianoff Comedy, and you can see the date. It wasn't there until my mom sent me an angry text message that I should have put the address on there. So there it is now. So until next time.